Hello, and once again, a very warm welcome to the Gestalten Podcast. My name, and as always, is Martin Groschwald. And in this week's episode, we are talking to somebody who has really seen in the first place what I call the gold rush or the new gold rush in Californian car design. We are talking to the VP of Advanced Design of Kia Motors in the United States, and that is Andre Luis Franco. Now, Andre is, like myself, a fellow Germanman, and he has come over to the States and started actually working at Tesla. He was one of the very first people to make the leap from a very established company such as BMW to a then unknown and a very risky business of Tesla. But it also means he has seen all the great things, the terrible things, the questionable things, but also everything that California has to offer in various positions in his career since he's moved over from BMW to the Californian coast and to Tesla. Now at Kia, he of course uses his experience from the Tesla days, from other companies that he's worked with in the past, to really push with a more established company into a new mindset of thinking. And it's been a super interesting conversation with Andre. So unless you really have something against two Germans speaking English, you will really enjoy this chat. And yeah, without further ado, let's go with Andre Luis Franco. I am here in Irvine in Southern California, and with me in this lovely little room here is Andre, and Andre is currently at Kia, but he's also one of these very, very few people who started in California with what I would probably call the gold rush. Andre, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you. And let's actually go a little bit into that. You came here in 2011?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Martin. Yes, 2011 is correct. I think it was April 2011.
And you were, and then we talked about this beforehand, but you were the first of the Germans that joined from a major OEM to go to Tesla.
Yes.
Franz was here before, but like you were the ones like really made the step from the old world into the new world. In many, many different ways.
Yes, I believe with the mother tongue German, I might have been the first one. At least I was the first one biting off the carrot when I left my position back in Europe, yes.
So let's start off with that kind of question. And, you know, it's a very broad one, but why did you leave? What was the reason for you to come to California? Because at that time, Tesla was, you know, a startup. Not a lot of people thought about it. It's going to be big and as big as it is nowadays. So A, making that step is one thing, but then also like, okay, you know, why would I want to go to California even though you had certain kind of connections with BMW beforehand? But what did bring you here?
I think it was a multitude of things. I mean, as you mentioned correctly, I think that Tesla back then for many were not even on the map. And for the ones that it was on the map, it was more a risk than anything else. Obviously, you know, the EV hadn't proven itself back in the days yet. But I, you know, my personal story with moving, but also with California is a particular one. My father worked in the automotive industry for 40 years and was lucky through his languages to actually be moved around in the big VW group back then. So I actually grew up in Brazil, in Spain, in Portugal. And somewhat I over the course of those decades, I created almost like an inner clock that, you know, every time when I learned when it particularly became a good environment and you felt comfortable where you were, it was about time to actually reorientate yourself and be immersed into a different culture. And I always liked that thought. So when I actually got the call from Tesla in 2010, I was very intrigued by the idea of joining a new company, of being part of a different culture here in the US, and just experiment. You know, I was at that point in my mid-30s. I thought that it was the perfect moment to still make a leap. And if it would have been the wrong leap, you still could go back and still find a job probably. But I felt like it probably was a bigger danger for me not making the leap and waking up at some point when the time was gone than actually trying it out.
Give us a little bit of an insight, because when you came over here, if we look back a little bit, the biggest studios were either the Japanese ones, so Kalti, Nissan, Honda, I think was quite big at that point as well, or interestingly, the Germans, so like Designworks and DCC from the Volkswagen Group. So California didn't have a very natural American presence for car designers in that sense. And then obviously Tesla comes along, which kind of completely changed that. So if you look back when you arrived over here, what was the feeling like? Was it, you know, almost like a dead industry? Was it a very relaxed industry? Was it always forward thinking? What was your feeling when you first came here?
Well, my first feeling is, you know, I had California as a design driven industry on the map for many, many years, right? You know, when you're in college in Germany, especially when I was in college in Germany, the big concept cars were either coming from France or they were coming from the US, and especially from California. Back in the days, you know, it sounds like it's that long, but it's about 20 years, 25 years ago. California was known for its satellite studios, mm-hmm. right? And satellite studios because the lifestyle, the beach, but also the mountain, the palms, all contributed to a very engaging and active lifestyle. And I think that all of the companies send out their studios to actually early on see certain trends and actually design based on them. And it also very often became an incentive to send designers that were very promising to actually have a year of a break from the corporate environment and really create the, you know, making the best out of their creative juices, right? So when I came, all was basically satellite studios. And I was, back then, I was not so interested in satellite studios, but the very intriguing thing about Tesla back then was I was a guy that came out of production design. I had already contributed mostly to production design, you know, 7 Series, but several other cars at BMW. And then I also had contributed certain show cars. So I think that I was quite well-rounded in terms of having seen both sides of the spectrum. And Tesla definitely was intriguing for a myriad of reasons. A, it would become a design studio that is not a satellite studio, but it would become one of the maybe long gone American companies that actually had a great potential, you know, and actually trying to carve out a very specific area for themselves, which was electrification. Nobody else was doing that besides BMW, where I actually was at that point working for BMWi. So it was intriguing, change of culture, being part of something new, where it almost felt scrappy, entrepreneurial, but also a little bit like college again. Having the ability to work with a different mindset was very intriguing for me. And also leadership-wise, you know, Elon obviously wasn't the over figure that he is today. But back then, he was a young entrepreneur that you know, showed the guts of wanting to beat David against Goliath. And that was very intriguing for me as well.
Yeah. So you were at Tesla for like, what, 5 years?
I was at Tesla pretty much 5 years, yes. 2011 to 2016.
In those 5 years, but also, let's say, the span of those 10 years, what has changed in California? What is it that you've observed and that has a fundamental impact on where we are nowadays? Because we, A, have so many more studios here. I would actually say we have, maybe with the exception of China, the biggest density of studios in a rather small area here. And that that wasn't the case in the early 2000s, mid 2000s. This started in 2010 to 12, that kind of time frame. So what had changed, not just obviously from a business perspective, but also from a mindset, and also in particular for a designer's mindset?
Well, I think I personally, in my case, I have to see it from both sides, right? So first, I was very prone at a young age for California because it, for me, was a very aspirational environment, right? Growing up as a kid of the 80s and having all of these series that basically portrayed a lot of transportation design in there. You know, if you look at, A-Team with the GMC van, if you look at Chips, where basically, you know, cars became almost guest appearances of iconic vehicles in every single episode. Everything was about vehicle design, Knight Rider, Automan, you know, with the Lamborghini. I think everything basically, I as a kid was triggered for the environment California, but also the context of these years with the cars and with the helicopters. Then when I became a designer, I was heavily influenced by furniture design.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very close friend when I was 16 and basically spent all of my time at their place. And those parents were very creative and had a lot of classic furniture. Design icons, and I really thought, you know, well-made products, it daunted on me that a well-made product is something very special. And that's how I got through furniture design, interested in design, although I was sketching cars already. But I don't want to preach to the choir that I'm one of those kids that started at age six and it was clear. I think that automotive design came later on a little bit for me. But back to your initial question is, I was personally triggered by California because of this upbringing. And then when I arrived here, it was basically satellite studios. And I was pretty impressed that coming from a different continent, I thought I would come here and not know anybody. Mm-hmm. But it was intriguing to see that actually I knew more people over here working for other design studios like VW, Audi, than actually even back home. You know, I didn't feel alone. The quest was a very different one because all of those guys were expats working in positions in these satellite studios, and I was one of the few that came out here on their own, obviously incentivized by Tesla, but nobody knew Tesla back then. You had to basically explain everybody, why would you do such a leap of faith? That's pretty crazy coming from a what we call in Germany a Planstelle,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is like the sacred thing for anybody in the university.
Unfireable, you know, you can plan your life throughout.
You know, if I would say, pushing it to the extent that if you don't kill anybody, you know, you won't lose your job. That's how it was perceived as a holy grail of jobs back then. But to me, all of that security was actually less interesting. It was more about, you know, I wanted to have a creative outlet and I wanted to find a company that actually also believed in me. And when I was approached, the possibility to actually be part of a new company, you know, at BMW with BMW, I had already gotten a little bit of that feeling starting something new. And I was really intrigued by it because you can define
yes.
a lot of things that normally you're not allowed to define. And being part of that was very, very intriguing. So when I arrived here, again, everybody who was established had a satellite studio. We were basically the first new studio since 50 years on American soil as an American company trying to make actually a point,
yes.
right? And it was incredibly exciting because it felt very scrappy, very entrepreneurial. We didn't have the means that Tesla has today. So it was basically you had to do the most with what you had. And that instilled a mindset of not always looking left and right and saying like, hey, I don't have what I need to do the job, but actually understanding that if you didn't find the answer, probably nobody else would give you the answer. And I think that created a mindset of go for it. Yeah. And it suddenly merged this creative notion coming from design with an entrepreneurial mindset. And I think that was the biggest life changer for me, that besides what I love design-wise and aesthetic-wise, I suddenly saw that it's so much more than just having certain boundaries. Yeah. You basically were asked to do anything and everything, even to the point when we had the first cars delivering cars to customers. Yeah. I don't know if that answered your question, but
the what I find interesting and that always comes up is this idea of could have been done anywhere else, because the way, you know, you also mentioned it's the first car company, obviously, in 50 years on U.S. soil that became big. And for me, the question is, could have happened somewhere else? And also, what were trigger points that allowed for something like this to happen? Obviously, if you look into Elon being or coming from the tech industry, not having this very traditional automotive background and finding a resurgence of this industry, probably because he wasn't. I mean, you can see this all the way through now with Cybertruck, where I think traditional industry says, that's a bit strange. And like, you know, why are they doing it like that? But it's also this idea of, well, just because nobody else has ever done it doesn't mean it's wrong. And it seems to me that the combination of that both, and we see that with a bunch of other companies nowadays, of course, is really interesting in the question of like why California is so special in this hub and like in what it is in the car world as well, because those two things come together here that we as Germans, yeah, quite honestly, don't see in Germany or anywhere else in Europe to that degree.
Well, I definitely think that it is due to California and the spirit, especially back then, you know, the spirit of opportunity. As you know, Elon is somebody who came to this country also at you know, he wasn't born here, right? He came here at a young age, I think 16 or 17, and saw this country as a source of opportunity, right? When I came here, it still had that feeling and notion, and I still believe it still has that today, you know, to the contrary of some others' belief, but I still think it's an amazing country of opportunity, especially California. I mean, one of the things that I believe was just the creation of Tesla was just possible at that time being here was obviously all of this West Coast, Silicon Valley, you know, entrepreneur. You start in a garage and suddenly, you know, you became an Apple or you became an HP was definitely a big factor in it, right? And then obviously lesser known is you have a lot of investors over here that actually invest money in startups, mm-hmm. and where they see a potential. And some of these startups obviously shine because they have a figure, as young as they might be, that basically set themselves apart, even in areas where they have no understanding of when they start the companies, like an Elon in the automotive industry. But I think it's the ultimate drive of these guys that they see something and they're true visionaries, things that even if they explain it to you, you are not even able to grasp it at this point. And I think that ultimate drive is what made a Tesla, right? And I think that drive, especially for me coming from German premium brands, where we are so prone to amazing processes, we get it down because we dial it in from the beginning when we start. We have certain trainings that we go through that explain you exactly the product development process. So it's basically becomes, you know, embedded in your DNA. But then coming over here and being asked, okay, cut everything that you know, make it shorter, be entrepreneurial, be scrappy. That actually took me a while to comprehend that I was able to shake off certain limitations that were there by education for me.
Yeah.
And that actually became very interesting because it took me a while, I would say a good 12 to 18 months to understand that freedom. But once you had it and you became more and more in sync with a mindset change coming from the software world, from Elon, the more it empowered you, and the more basically you understood that, you know, don't wait for answers, search for your own answers. And with that, you know, propel the product cycle, become faster, take the best guesses, and by all, follow common sense. And I think that we in the automotive industry, at least 2011, when I came to it, we didn't follow common sense, because very often it was more a matter of a carryover than of common sense.
Don't question the process, because it's it could actually improve it.
Yeah, don't question the process, because you know this supersedes your Gehaltsklasse, you know, your salary level, yeah. Right? The great thing about startups is actually teaching you to do the best out of nothing, yeah. But also that you, with the knowledge that you bring from these big OEMs, and I think that's why many people were in the early days recruited from the OEMs, is they knew their processes, they knew their basic skills. And, you know, the other great thing of great leaders, what I've learned in the last 12 years working for several startups, is that great leaders don't shy away from hiring the greatest people just because they feel threatened that they actually could, you know, succumb other people's knowledge. Great leaders actually surround themselves with great knowledge, and they basically are like a sponge. They suck up that knowledge, and in a couple of years, they become really knowledgeable in fields that they were not knowledgeable at the point of hiring. So I think that's a big portion too of the startup mentality that I was immersed in.
I want to ask you something, obviously, because you've been one of these very few people who have actually then worked in the EV space here for a very long time, but also in actual studios that produce here as well. Yeah. Now, if you look into the satellite studios and taking into account what you just said with the leadership, with a different mindset that goes into that as well, is that also maybe then the question of, like, you know, purpose for satellite studios? Because in the end, creating concepts, it's all nice and it's great and it's fun, and we can go to Pebble and show it there or to any kind of car show in that sense. But you want to take an idea and bring it to life and also release it into the public as well. So my personal observation for quite some time in California was that it's great for concepts, but once you have to bring something to life, there was also maybe a gap and like a lack of the skill that were in that as well. And it was never really asked to do that. And then something like Tesla came about, and then you had, you know, the Karmas, the Faradays and stuff, and they were actually in the process of producing. So you had this gap in the people as well. The ones were the dreamers, and then the other ones were like, yeah, we can dream, but we still have to produce it. And that for me was, it seemed like a very big shift in how the industry works over here, especially in car design.
Yeah, well, you know, the early days of electrification, and as you mentioned, I've been working exclusively on electric cars and electrification in general, because I think it's more than just an electric car, right? If you take the business of electrification serious, it's more than the electric car. It's the infrastructure. It's how you actually and from where you create your energy, for instance. And, you know, I have obviously, since I've lived in California, I've lived in the perfect environment for an electric car, right? Especially if you are able to charge it from your own property, from a garage, or, you know, you can charge it right off there. Obviously, if I would still live in Munich in an apartment, and I would have to bring down an extension from the fourth floor, that might look very different. But that's where I'm a very big proponent that I personally don't think that the electric car is at fault. I think that the electric car has proven itself over and over again, mostly obviously in these areas where we have a lot of light and we can actually charge sustainably over solar. But I think the electric car itself, even range-wise, for me as a daily commuter, it's absolutely enough. And even, you know, we don't even look at range anymore, my wife and I. And I think depending on where you are in the environments, it is up to the responsibility of the manufacturers also to look into infrastructure and how to, based on the location, create actually sustainable infrastructure using wind, using thermal, using solar, depending on what your location allows you. I am very much the opinion that we are, as humans, a product of basically our environment and of our experiences and influences, right? And that being said, is I had the perfect fertilized grounds here to become an advocate for electric cars. Maybe if I still would live in Germany, that might be different, or anywhere else. But here it's pretty perfect, I would say.
What has changed also in terms of the people, in terms of what you see as well in the difference of understanding for that as well? Because the one thing is, great to create concepts,
yes,
rather than, you know, production cars. And it's a skill question, obviously, first and foremost, to say like, okay, do we know how to build a production car, or is it just a show car?
Yeah.
But also, has it changed the environment for that as well? Because it used to be just this ultra creative spot, and now you're in this pressure zone of building vehicles that's supposed to go into the market.
Well, I think that that is an opportunity that for us designers wasn't there before, right? So I would say before I came to, you know, before 2011, when I migrated to the US, a show car was a show car. And a show car was basically built as a representation of what a production vehicle could be. First short project in and out. And it could be a slow driver, or it could be a pusher, right? But that's what it was. I think there's a paradigm shift for me, the way I see show cars nowadays, and also production vehicles. Because at Tesla in the early days, we couldn't just build show cars because we didn't have a proven track record. And therefore, obviously, you know, we had to build prototypes that would give rides to people, 1,500 people a night, to actually collect money so that you would have actually something to work with, right? And that has changed fundamentally the way I see actually show cars and the way I see companies. I think when you're an established company and you build a show car, you don't have to prove that out of that show car you can create a production vehicle, because you have proven yourself over and over, over decades. But if you're a startup, you have to prove your point. And I think in the last 12 years, what has become visible is most companies can build great show cars. But when it comes to the point to make the leap from a show car to an actual production vehicle that multiplied in the hundred thousands or millions, always get built over and over again with the same gaps, with the same quality, that's really hard work. So I think we are nowadays, you know, 13 years after I started in California, I would say the industry has changed, because the companies who just focused on building show cars to collect money has suddenly gone away, mm-hmm. because they couldn't comply with a business case to make themselves sustainable. Yeah. So nowadays, I almost conceive that you have a couple companies that do really promising, great vehicles, right? You have the Teslas, you have the Rivians, you have the Lucids, that really make a very compelling technological product, but obviously are still perceived as these companies who've joined the OEM world as the youngest and still are perceived like startups. And they have a certain volatility because some of them might not be able to sustain their own business yet. What I do see, though, is that the OEM world, after all of these years, also has taken interest, obviously, in what the secret sauce of these startups was. And suddenly, for me, established OEMs, not all of them, but a few of them, that's also why I joined the current employer where I am, Kia. I think that a few of them take electric variation serious and take the mindset that came out of startups serious as well. The only problem that I see is that mindset nowadays is so misunderstood word. Depending who you talk to, that person will have a very different idea of what mindset stands for or not. Mindset is just a general term. But you know, we in this industry, we always kind of get trapped again and again of creating legacy products that are then followed by refreshes, facelifts, whatever you call it, depending on where you are. And it's way too easy to say, oh, you know what, we'll take the parts from that car before, we'll make it look different, but in basically, you know, the old vehicle is amortizing the new vehicle in terms of cost. And it's clear because, you know, the profits are always going lower, content is going higher, makes totally sense. But at the point where we are in the world, that's not how you do leaps anymore. And I think that's also where the Chinese play a role, because the startup momentum that was started here in California, in terms of timing, has the perfect breeding grounds in China, because they're very fast, right? And they will throw the capacity that they need to go fast. Mm-hmm. Maybe not elaborate to the last detail, but that allows them to be fast. And you know, I think that has incentivized Chinese developers to produce cars very quickly, and also to not try to cut corners in certain areas. Yeah. They cut the corners in other areas, but from a pure aesthetic approach, they look very modern and very future oriented, right? So that maybe plays a role in there as well.
Do you think that this kind of startup mentality is still here? You talked about, obviously, earlier about the general mindset, the entrepreneurship, that kind of push factor to try something, which I think is something that's constantly happening here. There's a much bigger attitude toward, let's give it a try, and if we fail, then we've learned something, rather than, well, if we don't know, we're not going to do it in that sense. But this kind of context of, like, I'm not going to say a next Tesla, but we've seen companies fail now here as well, you know, making life more and more difficult, obviously. And it's very difficult to build a car company, let's be very honest.
Yeah.
But do you think that the mentality is still there to push that hard, or has things changed a little bit because of certain kind of setbacks or, you know, certain things that just happened? Because there's a lot of stuff that happened here. And I think, you know, some stuff could have only happened over here. But do you see any kind of, not negativity, but just more respect now in terms of, like, well, before we start, maybe we should have a little bit more of a plan like the Germans? Or is it still this kind of full on, let's just give it a try?
No, I think something has changed for sure. I think the mentality is there because it's ingrained in here. It's also ingrained in the American way of doing things, right? And, you know, a business is not successful if you fail and you don't try again. But there's a myriad of people who have been bankrupt many, many times before they became really successful. So I think it's part of the American mindset of believing, you know, failing is part of the process, is part of the way. And, you know, when an Elon always refers to the early days of, it was like staring down an abyss and chewing glass, it's because the chance of making it was very minute,
yeah.
Right? And I think that shows you the mindset of it. It's not about making it in the first shot. It's more about the journey of struggling and making course corrections that might lead you to a path of sustainability for a brand. I think in terms of the car industry, the sentiment has changed, especially also for EVs. I think it will not deter the outcome of the EVs at the end. But it definitely has changed because the urge to put in money from an investor side into electrification has changed.
Yeah.
There is definitely, people are being more sensitive to a potential outcome that you might lose all of your investment. And honestly, in parts way, I think it's good too, because there was this crazy hype about, oh, you got spare money, you put it into an EV company. It shows also too that making cars and creating a company that self-sustains itself without external money is incredibly hard. And you just make it as an underdog if you really challenge the norms. Because if you just copy what established companies have done, why would you always go to the underdog if you could buy, you know, an established brand for the last 100 years? So I think the mindset change is it needs to have other attributes. When I, for instance, was at Tesla, it was never about making the best EV. It was about making the best car. And I think if you strive for that, then you have a vision and a goal. And the best car was not creating a vehicle in isolation, but actually creating a vehicle that lives in harmony to a network, to an environment that self-sustains it. I think that's very important too, because there's enough companies who jumped on the bandwagon for market share interest and who have sacrificed a little bit the potential of a from the ground up EV for that. And that's a little bit a disservice to the companies who really take EVs for serious.
Do you think your role in the way you think as a designer, so if you look back a little bit, just imagine, you know, you come to California 13 years ago, you know, you personally had, of course, a mind, you know, a change, a development in personality as well, but also probably professionally. You look at things very differently. When you look at young kids coming through university right now, can you see that there was this development from like when you started here in terms of how they're thinking right now? Because like that environment is almost like, you know, it gives them the growth. It gives them the ability to soak everything up, to be that sponge as well. And probably even more so or multiplied than in other areas such as maybe the UK or Sweden or even China. Do you see a change there, that anything happened, both for you personally, of course, but also like for the young kids when you hire them or like when you work with them and for internships or like, you know, student projects?
I would say yes and no, right? I mean, as I mentioned, I think we all are a product of our environment, right? And about the experience we do on a daily basis. So somebody who is more immersed here and seeing how many EVs are on the road and the sun and charging them over the solar and whatever has a different exposure than somebody who lives in an area where you have felt, you know, 6 months of winter and an EV might struggle with cold or, you know, it's very different depending where you are. So yes, because they're inspired by what they see on a daily basis here. But I also think no, because I think nowadays students have an incredible burden on themselves. When I was in college, we were the first people actually seeing a computer for any work related to design. I think nowadays you have so many areas where you try to make an impact. Before it was about you have to be the best at exterior design. Mm-hmm. You want to be the best at interior design, to carve out a spot under the few spots of interior design or exterior design. Nowadays, all of the students try to have the broadest stance they can have. They have to be perfect in exterior design. They want to be perfect in interior design. They want to actually bring in the holistic approach of user interface and user experience. Oh, and by the way, they need to visualize it perfectly, model it perfectly. They basically have to create almost like a movie out of it with sound and everything. So the complexity of our students nowadays is way higher. The ambition is great, but so often you actually see students who struggle a little bit because they lose themselves in all of the myriad of things that they actually put as a test on themselves. And I think that it is good and it's bad because the few that really excel in what they're doing stand out incredibly high, but it actually puts a burden on a lot of people. But for our industry, it's great because I think that our way of working has changed completely. I think that we nowadays are more of storytellers than just, you know, one thing where I really react very sensitive is when we as designers are actually compromised and just seeing as stylists. Mm-hmm. I personally see ourselves being way more than that. It's almost like we are the philosophers or attorneys of the product, right? Where we basically we combine all of these individual tasks, the car has to look beautiful from the outside, and it has to prevail over the course of decades, so that every time when you get to your destination, you look over your shoulder and you go like, that's the vehicle I came out, that's the vehicle I'm getting in again. But it's also very triggered by a mindset of ownership. Yeah. And the systems have changed, you know, to have car sharing, robot taxi, and whatever. So we have to understand what experience in the future we create so that those people who don't have a ownership experience in mind anymore, how we still get them in. Because at the end of the day, transportation always was a medium of expressing your freedom, your freedom to go somewhere, your freedom to escape reality, your freedom of escaping urbanism and getting into nature. So the question is really for the future, how can we actually express all of that through experiences to get the next generation still engaged with the vehicle, with transportation design in general?
Let's jump into that, because that's interesting for me, because when I look into California, the experience in general, you kind of go into starting with Apple on this one, the kind of connection of everything, the seamless interaction from your computer to your phone, to your watch, to now your headset and everything else that you have as well. And for me is when I look into that, that kind of holistic thinking of design, no matter how old you want it to be, you know, go back to Dieter Brahms, you know, the famous and infamous German industrial designer back then. But if I look into like a global level, and if we want to be as, you know, direct and say East and West, you have China where you have a certain kind of holistic system. And then you have probably California. I wouldn't even go as far as saying like the US, I would say California, because you have this inspiration from Apple, Google, Meta, whatever they're called. And that inspiration is something that I think shows also what can happen with the vehicles. And to explain to you where I'm going with this is also the combination of old versus new. Because I really doubt that something like a Singer could have happened in Germany. You might have, you know, had like, you know, the tunings and everything, but the pure fundamental of old and new together and the courage to do something like that is for me, again, just like this holistic picture that comes from this tech world where you can draw things from and ideas from that I don't really see anywhere else. And I don't really see this obviously in China, because like the old car, the classic car industry is just not there, but that's, you know, a different story. But that's what I find interesting, because that's also where the uniqueness of California comes in to a certain degree, where you have this ultra high level, everything goes and everything's possible, AI and whatever not is coming in. But also you have this very traditional kind of concept behind it. And the mix behind it is where it's really fascinating. And I think you can see that in some of the products that are being made here as well.
Well, you mentioned a couple of really important things, I think, right? I became a designer because, you know, I really appreciate a quality product. And I think that we live in a world where not every product that's manufactured serves a purpose of contributing to a great cause or, you know, the quality of its own. A lot of it is for market share, and a lot of it is to make money. But if you mention Apple and you mention Singer, I think they have one thing that unifies them, and that is definitely absolutely on the hardware side, right? To create something out of the materials that you would expect, not plastic, but aluminum or metal or, you know, carbon fiber. And then obviously the execution of it, right? The meticulous execution of any Apple product always supersedes any competitor that is not made out of the real materials that you try to make them look like. You know, a painted plastic part will never shine the same way as an anodized aluminum. And the feel will never be the same, because one is real, the other one not. And, you know, I think the concept of Singer would have been difficult in Germany, because the aura Porsche is so dominant that a German already thinks that's the top of the pops. So how could another person make that even better and create actually a more inspiring proposition than the actual brand. I think that's where California really plays a role, because hot rodding has been a huge thing in California for 100 years, right? Singer is nothing else than the most tense, tasteful, fanciest, well-executed hot rod, right? And that deserves also the price that they're asking for it, because it's done to a level of quality and attention to detail that you normally, in an industry where everything is about efficiency in your spending, you can't. Mm-hmm. Because everything is about, oh, if this is 53 cents more expensive, the controller comes and hits your hand and says, like, nope, can't do this. Car is getting too expensive. Singer has the luxury that it has found its niche of people who really appreciate what they do, but also to the level of execution that you cannot get anywhere else in the shape that is known for 6 decades now. So I think one comes with the other. The other thing about Apple, besides their hardware execution, is their ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And that's where you come into the experience level in the industry. Apple, as one of the few, have understood that it's not just the sum of its components that make the experience great, but it's basically maybe 90% of the times offering you an easier way of getting to your where you have to get, maybe not being the most performant, but being the most intuitive. Mm-hmm. So it's all about the experience that, you know, your loudspeakers seamlessly integrate with any of your other devices, the laptop, the phone, you name it, that the new Vision Pro seamlessly connects with your headphones. All of that contributes to a belief in technology, because it becomes almost magic. And I think that many of these experiences that Apple has created, they have become a paradigm shift the way we interact with things. You know, the pinch gestures. I mean, even my 4-year-old or nowadays 6-year-old, she goes to every TV and starts pinching.
Yeah.
Because she thinks that every display has that cleverness built in, and it becomes so intuitive. And I think ecosystem and then, you know, the intuitiveness plays a huge role in the experience. And that's definitely something where the car world has to catch up.
Yeah, this is really the point for me. Is like, I don't really see many other places where that combination can really happen. Because you need to be somewhere close to the pulse where this happens. You need to have the mindset of the people to do that as well. And then you need to have the creatives to take that and come out with an idea, but also with an idea that can be brought to life. And that's, for me, really like the crazy thing about California, is that almost it's not really tapped on enough. Because it's tapped on in topics of what you mentioned, like technology. Like, okay, they can do this, but it's just like, no, where's the connection points with all of this together? And that's, for me, really the big question in the end of, like, you know, the satellite studios. Because do we really need satellite studios that just make another car or like another show car? You know, you can always argue, you know, with Nissan, with Kalti, yeah, they have a market here and they make specific market products. But if you don't really do that, you know.
Well, I think the world of the satellite studios has changed significantly too, because most of these satellite studios, which used to be basically an incubator for ideas that then would be executed at the motherships, has stopped. I think nowadays it's either ideas that contribute to a different form language, or they're very deeply rooted into this melting pot of lifestyle technology. I mean, the secret sauce of California is you know, you have the lifestyle, you have obviously the weather, the sports that you have around here, but also all of the Silicon Valley,
Hollywood, entrepreneurial,
and the entertainment, and all adds to that secret sauce that you have here. And that's why I think that many of these things wouldn't be able to be started anywhere else, right? And I think that California becomes actually the prime example, and you know, companies are trying to execute that in other parts of the world where you have similar conditions. It's just that the conditions here on a very small area are just perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect for cars, perfect for products. And for me as a designer, that's my daily motivation and inspiration, being immersed in all of that multicultural, multi-product, multi-lifestyle. Everything is a multitude of everything. Yeah. And it's hard to find that anywhere else.
And also the courage to use it.
Courage to use it. Courage to actually fail and then learn from your lessons. You know, we in Germany, we actually tend to fail very late. And then it's almost no time to adapt from that mistake. One thing that I learned in the early days here in the US is, especially in these mindset-driven startup companies, is you want to fail as early as you can. And you want to fail multiple times to make the product better within the process time. And I think that's a big thing to say about California and the way things are actually done here, is that failing is part of the journey, you know, and you shouldn't avoid failing because you just make the product better if you fail and you actually adapt from that failure as quickly as you can.
Let's have a tiny look into the future and let's say next 5 years or so, 5-10 years, probably something that we can realistically talk about. What do you think are the big challenges that California has to kind of take the next step, in particular in the topic of car design, of course? Yeah. So where do they have to get better? Where, what kind of environment or what kind of system has to be grown, nurtured, developed? But also, where is, you know, the biggest advantages that need to be watered even further, just to kind of step even further ahead in certain kind of areas? And you can start with whichever you prefer.
Yeah, it's a tricky question, right? I mean, I am still a believer of the core. I don't want to call them core values, but of the benefits of this specific environment to anybody who is in the business of creation, of defining a product, right? Because I think that great products are actually conceived when they're actually in a incubator that allows for positivity, right? So obviously the weather, you know, as the one factor that is the most superficial here, probably the weather and the ability that, you know, out of 365 days, you probably can spend 330 days outside and get inspired by things. That plays a huge role. On the other hand, obviously, you know, we don't get stuff done here just because we enjoy the weather. So, you know, but behind the scenes, you spend a lot of time working. But nevertheless, I think that, you know, on the way of your commute, on the weekends, there is so much potential to actually find a positive outlet that energizes you, that I really believe that California for, you know, the next decades is still an area to be perceived as one of the hubs. Obviously now with electrification and, you know, a lot of Chinese companies going into the run as aggressive as they have because they were incentivized by the governments, you have created other hubs, right? Shanghai used to be a big hub. I think that Shanghai has lost a little bit through the pandemic because it probably hit them the hardest. You know, Germany has become a big hub of startup and production design studios. If you look at Munich, right? All of those Chinese companies that actually created a foot in Europe, that has created a big area. Back in the days, you know, Spain with Sitges used to be a big creative hub. So I think it's a myriad of things, you know, the environment, the interesting city by being multicultural and allowing a hub, but also the weather, then obviously the connection to tech. Mm-hmm. For the future, I personally think, you know, California has been seeing a little bit negative for the last years with always more news of people pulling out and leaving, you know, companies like Tesla and Elon transitioning to Texas, mm-hmm. for some obvious reasons, you know, in terms of policy, in terms of money. But I still think that everybody that I actually welcome here, besides you, you are one of them, they always come to California as an inspiration. Mm-hmm. You know, people come here and they're revitalized through their couple of days that they spend here or 2 weeks, and they do things that they don't do it back home. They experience different things, right? I mean, just the fact that a couple of colleagues of mine came over here and they saw different culture, different food, mm-hmm. but suddenly also they see the Cybertruck on the road. I mean, that all has an impact on them. Yeah. And it's probably things that here you might see these products that you might not see somewhere else early on that have an influence. And the ultimate, I think, for the car industry is, you know, California has an incredible car culture. Again, incentivized by the great weather. Yeah. But at any given weekend, you probably, the biggest burden that you have is decide where you go, to which car show, to which cars and coffee, to which event, rather than not knowing where you go. Yeah. And I think that all plays a role and living the lifestyle of car culture.
Yeah. And do you see any challenges also as well, like things that need to be tackled?
Yeah, challenges for sure. I mean, you know, the cost of living is a high one. But also maybe the sentiment currently towards EVs, mm-hmm. Where, you know, the EV has always been something that didn't come natural, right? So the early adopters, or as I would like to call myself with a couple of my colleagues, you know, the early mobility pioneers in terms of electrification, we didn't leave our secure positions back in Europe because we didn't have a belief, but much more because we were triggered to actually make an impact and give it a chance. And I think that creates a culture of being open, of being positive. I still see that here. But the problem with the sentiment of the EV currently is that a lot of the naysayers, mm-hmm. suddenly now, where maybe certain cars are not sold as good as they were when they were incentivized, suddenly feel like, see, we were right about it. Ultimately, you know, we in the business of car design, we do a lot of things on a superficial level to make a positive contribution to selling the product to the customer. But I think we have gone past that point of just pure aesthetics. A lot of us believe nowadays that a shift to a more, I hate the word because it's so overused, but sustainable mobility, it's not just for the sake of making margins and being part of the market share, but it's actually because we all believe that a transition is good for the next generations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a certain responsibility at this point in history. So for me, it's more than just designing a line. It's actually, I want to contribute to a change of mindset, because I think we have the ability. Unfortunately, the sentiment currently is a bit against it. Yeah. But I think that that ultimately the technology needs also to have a little bit of a opportunity to grow. You know, we have 110 years, 120 years of ICE manufacturing. The ICE vehicle has come a long way. I think that the EV also deserves to have some time of improvement, of development. And we already see in the early birth years, I mean, you could compare basically us currently to afford in 1924. Just because the cars look a lot more sophisticated back then, it doesn't mean that they have much more developed time allowed for them. So I think, you know, the next years is definitely a years of opportunity to really also think about how can alternative powertrains make a leap towards the combustion engine. You will always have people that believe in the sound of vehicles. And, you know, I also enjoy that for obvious reasons, right?
We both do.
We all do. You know, you have a connection to the vehicle through the increasing sound of the RPMs and whatever. But I think, you know, we can create a lot of NEVs that actually caters to many more and that ultimately will have an impact. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of giving the EV the time that it needs. Yeah. Not endlessly, obviously, but it just has had a very short lifespan in comparison to the ICE. So I think it deserves to have enough time to become, you know, battery density goes up and it can prove itself.
All right. Well, then we keep our fingers crossed that this will happen. And I think, you know, California is going to be that place to be to help that kind of development as well, just because of the openness. And let's also hope they have a few more smaller cars. I do enjoy that a lot, you know, these kind of smaller cars and seeing what's happening in Europe at the moment in the prep for the recording. We talked about the i3 quite a bit as well. So I think, you know, if any place in the US is open for a smaller car, it could also be California, and that would give a big push also to the V industry over here.
Yeah, I'm definitely sure that the small car, and that's one close to my heart, because coming from Europe, we're not used to the wideness, and a smaller car makes absolute sense. But also for me personally, you know, a smaller car always has a more nimble footprint and allows you for more active driving, you know, more spirited driving, as we call it over here. And I think that's one of the big things about small cars is sometimes for me, you know, knowing that you drive an SUV just by yourself, it feels almost a waste of, I don't want to call it waste of energy, but materials and overall. And it just feels wrong and on certain days. So I think the small car has a really important role to play in the future. And I think that's the next obvious step for electrification. Now where prices start coming down a little bit is that you actually are challenged with building a smaller car that actually allows you for further propulsion of electrification among the masses. Yeah, smaller cars are great.
That's the greatest ending I think we will ever have to do an episode. Small cars. Andre, thank you very, very much. It's been an absolute pleasure to have that little chat with you.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. And I promise, you know, I've been here around for a few days now, and people tell me I should not come that often because every time I come, it starts to rain. So I promise next time I come.
It might be seasonal too. If you come in summer, you might not have
Last time I did come in the summer and it rained as well. So maybe.
Oh, really? So, yeah.
You know, Sasha called me the rain man.
Maybe the people have to come to you then and bring you some.
We can do that as well. Next time we're going to do this, we're going to do it in Munich. But hey, thanks a lot. It's been an absolute pleasure. And to our listeners, we hope, as always, you enjoyed this episode. And you will hear back from us in about a couple of weeks' time with the next episode in the season of Car Design in California.